Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening. Elliot Rodger considered himself to be intelligent, refined, handsome, fashionable, and charming. He spent years trying to be cool so women would like him. He thought if he just wore expensive and fashionable clothing, had a better car, or if he were rich, then women would throw themselves at him. In fact, he thought himself to be the supreme gentleman. Yet, women paid no attention to him. His only conclusion was that they were genetically flawed, and because of this, they ignored him and threw themselves at men who were ignorant, savage brutes. In his mind, his lack of success with women had ruined his life. He started to psychologically deteriorate. Rodger decided to get revenge. He spent months planning his day of retribution, an act where he would kill as many attractive women and the type of men that were drawn to, they were drawn to, as he could in a savage attack. Then he acted on his plan, killing six people and wounding numerous others in what became known as the Isla Vista Massacre. The story does not end with Rodger, however, as numerous other incels have since committed copycat attacks. The Supreme Gentleman Killer by Brian Whitney is the story of Elliot Rodger and how he turned from a nice, quiet, polite young man to the first self-identified incel, involuntarily celibate killer. The book that we're featuring this evening is The Supreme Gentleman Killer, the story of an incel mass murderer, with my special guest, journalist and author, Brian Whitney. Welcome back to the program, Brian Whitney.
Hey, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for coming to this program again with a very, very interesting case, I have to say. How did you come? Give us the circumstances and the whys and hows of how you came to be the author of this book.
Well, I've actually always been very interested in the case, even when the massacre first happened and incels sort of became a more popularized term. It's something that I've always been interested in, and I've also always been a little confused why no one's ever written a book about Elliot Rodger before, because his case to me is so fascinating. So I just pitched it to Wild Blue, who I've published a lot with, and they were interested in the idea. So I sat down and wrote it. And also Elliot wrote a manifesto called My Twisted World, which, you know, gives access to a lot of his thoughts about why and how he did what he did. So the whole thing has just always been very interesting to me.
Let's talk about Elliot Rodger. Is a very, very interesting background. And of course, you lay out every bit of his background and the psychology that envelops him in his life. Let's talk about his background, where he grew up, what were his parents like, what happened with that, his parents' marriage. Tell us about that.
Sure. He was born in England, from a wealthy family, moved to America at a very young age. His father's name is Peter Rodger, and he's a director. He was an assistant director on The Hunger Games, and then he did his own independent movie called Oh My God a few years later. His mother, her name is Chin. She had dated George Lucas in the past. So he was from a family that had some money, moved to America so his father could advance his career in film. He's a very shy, very, very shy kid, and he was always sort of obsessed with status and wealth and things of that nature, even when he was very young. And as time went on, I could talk for about 10 minutes on this piece, but I'm sure you'll have a follow-up question. But as time went on, he became more and more lost in a world where he felt that he didn't have any status, whether it be even in elementary school, he felt that way, any social status. Junior high school, that increased. High school, it increased even more. Women weren't interested in him. Girls weren't interested in him. And he was a very lonely, shy kid who kind of went off into fantasy a lot.
His parents, though, he seemed to be traumatized and was traumatized by many things, including his parents' divorce at a fairly early age.
Right.
Tell us about that,
right.
But also tell us this idea of privilege and his parents divorcing, but he did grow up in the upper middle class, so that afforded him certain things that I think, if you look through this entire story, certainly had some contribution in terms of some of his mindset, even early on. Tell us about some things about the private schools that he attended and why.
Yeah, and he was traumatized by a lot of things, but it's also interesting that a lot of things that he was traumatized by were not things that they were difficult things, but they weren't things that would cause most people to be as traumatized as he was by them, I would say. But his parents divorced when he was young. His father remarried rather quickly with a woman named Sumaya, who's a very attractive woman, an actress. Elliot, he always was closer to his mom and his dad, so then he started going back and forth between two houses. His father lived in a bunch of different areas of California, but they were all very upper-class areas, you know, with a swimming pool and the balconies and so on and so forth. His mom lived in an apartment at one point, and Elliot was very upset by that, you know, that he had to live in a, you know, what he considered to be like a poor environment, which his mother definitely was not poor, but in his mind, she was. So that definitely had a lot to do with it. He also, though, thought his father, because his father almost immediately remarried, he thought his father was very powerful because he could attract such an attractive woman so soon. You know, he did go to a lot of different private schools as he was growing up, which each school he hated more than the last one. His parents would remove him from one school and then put him in another school. He would just, in his words, he would be paralyzed with fear at school and he wouldn't dare to talk to anybody. But at the same point, this is what makes him really interesting. At the same point, even as he was paralyzed by fear and wouldn't dare to talk to anybody, he always thought that he was better, and he couldn't understand why these girls weren't attracted to him. He couldn't understand why they were attracted to these jocks, these guys that he thought were brutish sort of slobs. So it just became this rather unique thing with him where he did have all these privileges, and he had, you know, he was a decent looking guy and he had a lot of money and he had good clothes, but at the same point he couldn't reconcile his reality to what his thoughts were about what should be happening in his life.
He also developed with the divorce and the dynamics of the relationships that ensued from that, especially with Sumaya, that he didn't respect and appreciate the discipline or her disciplining him at all. And later that becomes important when she disciplines him and takes away the biggest joy of his life at that time. What is the dynamic that he sees? At first he sees his father powerful and that he was able to attract this beautiful woman. How does he develop these ideas of weakness and power? How does he come to that at such an early age? Where does that come from, you think?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, he was a very complicated guy. So Sumaya was from Morocco. Elliot, when he retreated, as lots of people do, as lots of young teenagers do. And he retreated into a world of video games. In particular, he was very into World of Warcraft, and he played World of Warcraft all the time. And Sumaya would try to limit his time on the game, and she would discipline him in other ways. She'd try to force him to go outside and play with other kids in the neighborhood, and Elliot just didn't want to do that. And occasionally, one time they made him to go to Morocco in the summer with her, which meant he couldn't play World of Warcraft at all, and he thought of Morocco as like a third world country. And so there were a lot of issues with Elliot and his stepmother, because she did end up marrying Peter, his father. And there were also a lot of issues with him, why he didn't understand why he, as Peter's son, was you know, forced to be secondary to this woman in his life. And that definitely, and he also, it should be said that at this point when he was young, they also did bring him to psychiatrists, and he had some diagnoses that he was on the autism spectrum, but it never was really that clear how far they went with that. And in fact, his father, Peter, was sort of like, I don't think he really is autistic. He thought he was just shy. His mother definitely thought he was autistic, and there were differing viewpoints from psychiatrists at that time. So they were aware that there were some issues, and they were trying to get him help, but no one ever was aware even slightly of how deeply he was going astray when he was young.
Right. Now, he developed this sort of philosophy, and you touched on it, about him being inferior in certain ways, but then also he had a pretty optimistic and positive self-image, which he thought he was very handsome. Tell us some of the things that he thought he had that were inferior and some of the things that he thought were superior. And this was at an early age in elementary school.
Yeah, at a very, very young age, he was aware, at least in his mind. I mean, this is in his mind. He was shorter than most other kids. He wasn't particularly athletic. He noticed even that it took him longer to swing on a swing. Kids younger than him could swing, and he still would have his father push him. He really hated that he was short. He used to lay down on the ground and just try to stretch to make himself taller. He tried to play basketball to make himself taller because as a young child, he thought that would make him tall, as opposed to the tall people played basketball. He became obsessed at one point with skateboarding because he thought if he could skateboard, he'd be cool. And he dyed his hair blonde. This is when he was like in sixth or seventh grade. He dyed his hair blonde. He's like, oh, if I learn to skateboard and my hair is blonde, then I'll be like, everyone will think I'm cool. But then other kids were better at him in skateboarding, so he just quit skateboarding. So this was kind of a theme throughout his life, these inferior things. But he considered himself completely intellectually superior to just about everybody. The title of the book, The Supreme Gentleman, is sort of a theme throughout his life, because in his writings he constantly refers to himself as him being a gentleman of class and tastes. And these other men that are boys that women or girls are attracted to are slobs, inferior to him. And he's very confused as to why these young women or girls, I keep mixing that term up because this goes all the way from he's like, you know, 12 until the end of his life. So that's the part of it. So in some ways he feels incredibly inferior, but in other ways he feels that he's vastly superior, and he can't understand why young women are attracted to young men that have different qualities than he has. And he gets very, very angry about this. It's not like the kind of thing where he's sitting around ruminating on this. I mean, he is very, very angry about it.
You talk about his awkward puberty and accidentally finding out about masturbation and turning into a great source of pleasure for him. And yet, even with World of Warcraft and even with this masturbation new hobby, there always seems some disappointment. We didn't talk about whether he had and his family had any religious background, but tell us about this him being so prudish about sex, even
yeah.
at a time when you wouldn't think a young boy would be of that mindset.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, there were a few times that he would get on AOL was big at the time. It's kind of like for people that are young, it was going to be in a chat room, that America
sure.
Online, and occasionally someone would send him something, you know, that might be a naked woman, and he'd get extremely upset by it. At one point, he was at a cyber cafe where people could get on computers, and he saw somebody else looking at porn, and he upset to the point that in the cyber cafe, for example, he saw the person looking at porn, and he got so freaked out that he left and he cried all the way home after seeing
yeah.
This image of pornography. And his masturbation, he was very, all he would ever think about was him, you know, having sex. And it was always a beautiful blonde girl. One of the most interesting things about Elliot, and I could say this later, but since this just came up, he never thought about himself being with a girl or a woman that was anything but the perfect looking woman. So it wasn't a situation where he was like, if an average looking girl in high school approached him, he probably would have totally blown them off, because in his mind, he was destined to be with a beautiful blonde woman, or if he wasn't, it was ruined. It was pretty much those two absolutes.
Right. Now, how about friendships? We in the book you write about his mom, you know, she's divorced. The father's divorced. There's trips to Morocco. He has a new woman in his life. So he's not the center of attention, and sometimes he is taken care of by nannies. So what about friends, and how does he approach friends? You said Sumaya tried to get him to go outside and play with friends. What's the problem with making friends?
He was incredibly shy. He was a very, very shy kid. His teachers throughout school would talk about how he would never really speak to anybody. This was also a theme throughout his life, where he, whether it be females or male friendships, he would kind of hope that things would happen and get really angry when they didn't. But he really pretty much never would actually take any steps himself to make these relationships with people, whether they be male or female. As far as male friends, there were a few times, he basically didn't have any when he was really young. There were a few times that he had these little groups of friends that he'd play World of Warcraft with, or go to the cyber cafe. But then even then, he would find out sometimes, like he'd be playing World of Warcraft and with these three other kids, and he'd find out they were all in the same room, at some other house playing, where they didn't invite him to come. He had one good friend for quite a while named James, that he sort of connected with around World of Warcraft and would get together with on occasions. That friendship ended because of Elliot's behavior later in life. And it was the same sort of thing with guys who'd get really angry. If, say, he had a friend even when he was 13 or 14 and the friend had a girlfriend, Elliot would get really, really mad. Really mad, just that the person actually had a girlfriend and would often end up getting in a fight, not a physical fight, but a verbal fight with that friend about that fact.
Now, the relationship with his parents, he's always close to his mom and always had affection for his mom, but things change with his father, and tell us why, and what do those changes result in for him?
He did always, he was very clear, and this is the odd part, because his mother didn't have much money comparatively. I mean, I think she's basically middle class. She wasn't poor at all. But he did have a very close relationship with her, but he didn't feel that she had the ability to, like, you know, up his status at all. Well, his father actually did. So over time, Elliot and his stepmother began to fight more and more. His father, in his mind, completely took... And again, as I'm saying this, most of this information I'm getting from police reports and background information that has been in investigations, and also Elliot's own thoughts. So these are Elliot's thoughts about his relationship with his parents. That his father took Sumaya's side all the time. That you know, and over as time went on, their relationship became more and more fractured because of, as I've said before, that he felt that, that Peter always took her side and never his. So they became less and less close as time went on.
What about World of Warcraft? What was the whole role-playing game situation online? What did that present to him? What did he think of it?
Well, I mean, I've played World of Warcraft, so I have an idea. It's one of those games where you're not only, and back in the day, this was one of the first games like this, you know, back in,
right.
You know, I would say probably you started playing in like 2007, 2008 or so. It was one of the only games like this where you aren't just playing a game, you're also playing with other characters that are other people. So people communicate with you, you join a guild, which is kind of a group, you do things together in the guild, and it's kind of endless. You can just keep playing and playing, and there's always something else to do. You can lose hours, you can lose days, you know, in a game like this. So for Elliot, as it is for a lot of people, games of that nature are just ways for them to get out of their reality and do something that they feel, you know, that they kind of fit in with, and that they don't have the pressures of day-to-day life. So he had, at a lot of points in his life for years, like, it was all he wanted to do. Like, he didn't want to, he wanted to have a girlfriend, he wanted to have friends, but all he really did was just play World of Warcraft for quite a while, and was just lost in it. And it eventually it lost its luster, and he got tired of even that. But for years it was his thing.
Did he make friends online?
He made some, but then, as always happens with a game like that, it became more popular. So they weren't really friends, but I mean, there were people that he could chat with and make a joke with and communicate with. But as it became more popular, he started to hate the game more and more because there would be more and more quote unquote normal people on the game that would make jokes about virgins, or the people that play the game have no life. And since Elliot was a virgin and Elliot considered himself to not have a life, he started to get very angry and eventually quit. He also didn't like the fact that he played so much, similar to like the sports thing. He played so much, but he still wasn't all that great. There was still, like, if you play a game like World of Warcraft, there's a lot of competition as far as, like, you know, who's the best and who's the best healer or who's the best tank or whatever. And he wasn't that great. So even that, like, he started to get angry that he put so much time in and he still wasn't one of the best at it. So he eventually quit.
That was another theme as well, is that whenever he did anything, if anyone was better than he at skateboarding, then he lost his interest in it, because there was somebody that was better that hadn't done it as long as him, and so why continue?
Right. His whole life is like that. He always just would have these different ideas about something he might want to do, and then once he realized that somebody was better, especially someone, as you said, that hasn't worked as hard as he was, he would eventually give up and say, what's the point, you know, if he's not the very best at it, and he's not cool, and then why do it?
How close was he to his father, and how much of that father-son bonding was done despite his ambitious film career and his change in his personal life with Sumaya?
I think when he was very young, he was very close to his dad. I mean, he definitely really looked up to his father, and he still looked up to his father for quite a while. But then around the Sumaya time, again, they started to fall apart. And he also was very upset because he didn't understand why his father didn't get how unhappy he was, even though he would never tell his father any of these things. He became angry that his father didn't understand. Like, they'd go out for a birthday party or something, and his father would be with Sumaya, and he had a sister, but he barely talks about his sister. He also had a younger brother, but quite a bit younger. So at this point, his brother hadn't even been born yet. So You know, and it would be his birthday, and his father would be very pleased and proud and being nice to him, and Elliot would actually get mad at his father because how could his father be acting like everything's okay when he's so miserable? But at the same point, all he would do is tell his father that everything's okay. So it was that kind of relationship. I wouldn't even say it was a bad relationship per se. It was just a false relationship because neither one of them had any idea, you know, what the other one was really, what was really thinking at any point. There was no real communication going on between Elliot and anybody in his life.
He developed a hatred for these blonde, good-looking women that wouldn't give him the time of day right from the very beginning, from school, elementary school, to high school, and to college.
Yeah.
But at this early stage, he hated the women that would not pay any attention to him. But he also hated, as we said in the introduction, the jocks that he thought that they were stupidly attracted to, and these jocks were worthless, inferior. But he also thought more highly of certain races, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, he really did. And when you say, the thing is, too, if you know about the case or if you read the book, when you say hated, I mean, it's not even, there's no word to even describe how much he hated these people. I mean, he hated them with every fiber of his being. Like every woman that he desired that didn't want him, he hated. And every guy that he would see an attractive woman and a guy together, and he would get incredibly angry. Sometimes he would cry. It was that extreme. And yes, he did. This is another one of the things about him that's confusing as well as interesting. He would look down on if there was a guy, there was, for example, this is his term, but if it was a guy that was Mexican, that had an attractive girlfriend or would have sex with somebody, Elliot would get really mad. You know, he would be like, how can this obnoxious low-class Mexican, I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty much it, you know, have an attractive girlfriend when he didn't? He would get so incredibly mad. So it wasn't just, as you say, he would be mad at the beautiful young woman. He would be mad at the jock the woman was dating, but then he would also be mad if someone he considered lesser than him ended up with a good-looking girlfriend or had sex.
Yeah. Now, in his deluded mindset, I guess no one had told him, he didn't have any friends, he didn't have any brothers or sisters or anyone to tell them this, and he didn't know of it himself. He believed that he was a fairly good-looking person. As time went on,
he became
more stylish. He had the money, the means to buy expensive clothes. He eventually got a really nice car, but even before that, he thought that all he had to do was what? And women would approach him.
Well, are you talking about he thought if he were rich, is that what you're talking about? The financial aspect
of it?
The
idea too, this is a basic, you know, thing that people would learn socially, that he thought he could just stand somewhere, look good, and then a beautiful woman would approach him and say, hi, what are you doing? What do you want to make love? You know, so.
That's the weirdest part about it, is that throughout his entire life, he never actually asked anybody out. I mean, he never once approached anybody. He would get, you know, would go to a store and get a Ralph Lauren shirt and get really expensive sunglasses, and he'd comb his hair perfectly, and he would just sit somewhere. He'd go to the mall or walk around or sit somewhere. And he's a weird guy, so I can even imagine the way he would even be looking at women. And then he would see an attractive woman, and he would look at them, and then, you know, they would just keep walking, and then he would get really angry. And as time went on, he started to do really bizarre things where occasionally he'd drive past. For example, he would drive past two young women, and one time he would smile at them from his car. They ignored him, so he turned around and would, like, splash his, he'd pull up and throw his coffee on their pants and then drive away. Just a very, very maladaptive way of thinking that you know, that you would possibly meet somebody. And then he also was completely obsessed, even at a young age, was that if he was really rich, then women would want him. So that was another thing. He always wanted his mother to marry a rich guy, or his father to make more money, or his father's movies to be more successful. Because if that happened, then in his mind, he was guaranteed to have that beautiful blonde woman that he always wanted.
Right. Now, high school was a bust for him no matter where he went. And again, what's consistent through this, this guy is a big crier. He'll cry for hours. He'll go somewhere and cry.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. This
anguish.
But the thing is, I wanted to talk about was there are points where he has some optimism, some hope. Tell us about this college that and the idea of college and where he is at in terms of this mindset with there is some optimism at some point. He'll give it a try. Tell us about what college represented to him and tell us a little bit about this college.
Well, he had, throughout high school, this is a quick background, I mean, he had a whole myriad of problems. So in his mind, once he ended up going to a school that was just basically like a school for kind of troubled kids that couldn't fit in with mainstream high school kids, where he just kind of like did his work online and went home early and so on and so forth. And he'd kind of sort of given up in a sense. And then his parents took him out to dinner, his mother, not Samaya, but his actual mother and his father. And they were like, you know, we really think she could go to school. And he went to one school called Pierce, which was a community college, and dropped out right away for the same reasons. He would see an attractive woman with a guy and he'd get really mad and he would just leave, he'd drop his class because he couldn't even handle being in the class with them and so on and so forth. So he decided to go to Santa Barbara College, and his parents paid for that and they set him up and they gave him spending money. In his mind, it was in Isla Vista, California, which is a party town. It's known as a party town. Elliot had seen a movie called Alpha Dog when he was in high school that was set there, and he had it in his mind that if he went to this school, no one was going to know who he was, because he was this, in his mind again, he was this shy little loser. He always called himself a little mouse. He was like this worthless little mouse that everybody picked on and everyone ignored. And now that he was going to go to college, it was a clean slate and everything was going to be great. And there'd be literally no way that he couldn't, you know, start having sex all the time and getting laid, and his dreams would come to fruition, basically. So his parents, his father brought him there. He had a room where he had his own room, and he was had roommates, but he had his own room, and the other two had to share another room. And in his mind, like when he first got there, he was nervous as hell, obviously, but he was still very excited for his life to change, basically.
Let's use this as an opportunity, Brian, to talk about our sponsor for the program today, which is Ritual. We all want to do the right thing to keep our bodies healthy in the long run. But if we try really hard to eat kale salads and drink green smoothies, we're still most likely not getting all of the essential nutrients we need on a daily basis. Enter Ritual, the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients most of us don't get enough of from food, all in their clean, absorbable forms. No shady additives or ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good. Two easy-to-take capsules provide 9 nutrients you need to support a strong foundation for your health. My wife Lisa had decided to try Ritual about 3 months ago now. She really liked what Ritual had to say about their Ritual essential vitamin, and she feels very confident taking it and thinks it's made a difference in her daily activities. From D3 to omega-3, Ritual's Essential for Women helps fill gaps in a women's diet. Their no-nausea capsule design is gentle on an empty stomach, and there's a mint tab in every bottle to keep things fresh, so you don't get that fishy aftertaste common with most omega-3s. A subscription is easy to start, and it's easy to snooze. It's only $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered every month, no strings attached. Better health doesn't happen overnight, and right now Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during their first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/murder to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/murder. Now, Brian, you say that he was going to college. He was going to an idyllic place in his mind. He loved the place. And it seemed that for the very first time that he was much more optimistic about getting past this virginal state, meeting a woman, and being a success, and proving it to everyone that he was the supreme gentleman.
Right.
Tell us what happens at college with these roommates, the first roommates. He has temporary roommates because they enroll him in the school in the dorms in June or July, I believe, but he's not scheduled for school till September. So there's temporary roommates. Tell us about the experiences he has with these roommates.
Early on, he had a few different roommates, and a couple of them only lasted for a brief period of time. And they were kind of okay for the most part, just because Elliot just wanted to be left alone. So if somebody was even sort of polite to him and didn't like really pick on him in his mind, or not pick on him, but you know, it's like in his mind, he wasn't really trying to be great friends with these roommates. He'd never even been around people for the most part. He just wanted to like have it be okay. So initially there were some that were kind of okay, but that was only lasted for a few weeks, as you said, because it was all before school even started. Then he got in with some roommates that he considered to be low class, didn't like them, and almost immediately his roommates had a friend over, and the friend was talking about, like, you know, women and so on and so forth. And for some reason it came up whether or not Elliot was a virgin, or he asked the roommate if they've all had sex, and they all said yes, which made Elliot very angry. He went into his room and kind of freaked out and cried again, and, like, you know, kicked and punched some things and so on and so forth. And so he ended up fighting with those roommates like almost constantly, to the point that he ended up being moved to another unit, because he just couldn't even deal with the fact that these people, like these low class people, had had sex and that he had not had sex. Then he moved in with a roommate named Spencer, who was with quite a while, and he didn't really mind Spencer that much. For the same reason, the main thing he didn't like about Spencer is that Spencer was the only one that knew that he, you know, what his life was really like, that he was just not getting laid in his room all the time. But then Spencer brought home a young woman one day, had sex with her, which made Elliot very, very angry. And again, the only reason that he could even deal with it was he looked at the woman and didn't think she was that beautiful. So then he insulted Spencer for having sex with a woman that wasn't very attractive in Elliot's mind. So they ended up hating each other and getting in a huge fight. So this kind of thing just continued to go on. I don't want to get too ahead of myself and talk about his last roommates yet, but he wasn't doing very well with his roommates, nor was he doing very well with his goal of meeting women, to say the least.
You talked about this friend, that really the only friend he has in his life is this person named James, and they knew each other when they were young, and then later they, again, rebonded over World of Warcraft, and he still felt close to James, and felt close enough to James that he expressed his frustrations, and also something that made James exit his life. What does he begin to tell him and confide in him about?
Well, at this point, throughout his life, Elliot became more and more extreme with things. So briefly, but even at college, it obviously didn't work out at all the way he planned. The same things would happen. He he would look at himself in the mirror and put on these sunglasses and tell himself how beautiful he looked, and then he'd go to class and he would be ignored. I mean, not ignored, but no one would talk to him because he wasn't talking to anybody else either. So he was dropping his classes, getting angry at women and guys, same thing. So he started saying things to James, which were things that he really thought was that, you know, women were basically inferior, they were stupid. You know, he was getting more and more angry that they were, women in general acted the way they acted. He wished he could get revenge on people. Started to tell James even some of the things that he wanted to do. He was often talking about, like, you know, boiling people in oil and things of that nature. And there would be times that he and James would go out to dinner, get a bite, and an attractive woman would come in with a guy, and James would just be like, you know, man, we're screwed. And because he knew Elliot was going to freak out, and Elliot would get really, really angry. And eventually James just pulled away because he just couldn't handle how weird Gary, honestly, Elliot was becoming.
Mm-hmm. When he loses all his friends and school ends up to be a big bust for him, World of Warcraft isn't enough for him to distract him. What does he find online? What kind of communities does he find online? What kind of type of sites does he visit, and what does he find?
Well, he started, there was one site called puahate.com that he used to get on all the time, which is stands for Pickup Artist Hate. He would go on sites like that and bodybuilding sites, and he would basically just troll them. He would spend a lot of time, like, getting on these sites, like, you know, talking about how much he, you know, hated bodybuilders and POA hate. There was Tim and a bunch of other people that would just join together. This was before the term incel was popularized, but they were basically incels. They would join together and bemoan the fact that women were only attracted to, you know, guys with flat abs and just attracted to stupid men instead of, like, you know, intelligent men like them. And they'd kind of stoke each other's fires and get each other wound up. Not all of them, of course. That's the thing you have to be clear about with these kind of things. It's not like I'm saying every person who identifies as an incel back then too was being this dramatic about things, but Elliot did find some people that he could at least vent to online about the way he felt, because he didn't have anyone in his real life that he could do so to. Mostly because what he was venting about was so insane, obviously, but...
Right. He also read some things that reinforced or at least maybe even advanced his own ideas about rape and decriminalizing rape or legalizing rape. He did read some far more extreme things than even he was espousing and imagining online, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he did. I mean, he began to involve himself in things of that nature. He eventually became way more extreme than, you know, down the line. He was talking about putting women in concentration camps and things of that nature because they weren't able to think for themselves. But yeah, he became more and more. A lot of it was also his isolation, because, again, he went to this college with this dream of all this happening. He basically just dropped out of college, didn't tell his parents he wasn't even taking classes anymore. They'd keep sending his allowance. Then another semester would come up, he'd take a class, drop that because he'd become incredibly angry seeing beautiful women in class and so on. And so that, you know, with jocks and stupid guys. So he is he was spending all of his time in his room, not even playing WoW anymore, but just in his room fantasizing, making plans, playing the lottery constantly, because he thought that if he won the lottery that he'd be rich and then that would solve everything, and just deteriorating. And eventually he started thinking and plotting of this, what he called the Day of Retribution, where he would, you know, come out, pay for how they've treated him, you know, his whole life.
In that time, he's had some delays. He had an accident, broke his leg.
Right.
But also at the same time, he gave himself an out that if he won the lottery, he was thought he had intuition that he would win, then all his problems would be solved and he wouldn't have to kill anybody. You know, ironically, he would go get that woman that he hated and she would be attracted to him because he had the money. And then he would go live his life happily ever after. So, go ahead.
All I was going to say was, this went on for a long time. I mean, it's kind of important to, like, you know, I mean, this kind of stage went on for probably like about a year and a half, where in his parents' mind he was at school and he was doing what he was supposed to be doing, but he wasn't really doing any of these things, and he would continue to say, like, well, I might have to do it. I might have to go kill it. I don't want to, but I might have to just, like, you know, go kill everybody. And then he started reading these Law of Attraction books that were basically about, like, positive thinking and so on and so forth. So he would envision that he was going to win the lottery, and then he would buy, like, numerous lottery tickets, and he would be sure. He wouldn't just think. He would be sure that he had won. And and he would sit there and he'd be like, okay, I'm not going to have to kill everybody. Like, I'm gonna win the lottery and everything's going to be fine. And then the day would come and he wouldn't win, and he would freak out. He would, you know, attack his mattress with a knife, like just lose his mind. And then he would plan the day of retribution again. And then again, he would read another Law of Attraction book or he'd play the lottery again and it'd stop. He'd be like, okay, you know, if I win this, then I won't have to kill anybody. So this period went on for a while, and during this period too, I mean, not to ramble on, but, like, there's certain things. Like, there's one time he was on a field, just hanging out, and he saw, like, a bunch of guys playing football and some really attractive women, like, watching them, and he got so mad he went to a Walmart, got a super soaker, filled it with orange juice, came back, sprayed them all with his super soaker, like, ran away laughing like crazy, got in his car and drove off. So he was starting to sort of practice, you know, like, these little attacks. Other times he would throw coffee on a couple walking down the street, and then he'd just drive away and run back to his room and perseverate again for about 5 days on how he's going to, you know, how he's going to kill everybody. You know, it went on for a really, really long time, this process.
In that time period, too, he did some brave attempts, I guess, in his mind to see if he could find someone that would be attracted to him. So he went to parties that he wasn't invited to, seemed to blend in, even drank some beer, but just did some embarrassing things. And at one point, through his own undoing, he ends up getting beat up. And through all of this, when we talk about him being bullied, him being ridiculed, he so isolates himself and just the private schools and everything else, he never really was beat up. So in the midst of this mindset, he says a lot of things about last straws, but this beating is one of the last straws to put him and decide for certain that he's going to do this day of retribution, doesn't it?
Yeah, short version of the story is there were a few times, as you said, that he would go into a party and just kind of stand there. He'd get really drunk and drink vodka or whatever and walk to a party or go into a party and just sort of stand there and then leave because he didn't know what to do. But this one time he brought up the racial thing. What stirred it, he went to this party that he didn't know anybody. He just knew through stalking Facebook, there was this big kind of frat party thing going on with, like, a couple hundred people. And he went in and there was an Asian guy talking to a really attractive woman. So that made him really, really mad. You know, that this woman was talking to an Asian guy instead of him. And he ended up trying to insult the Asian guy. The Asian guy just was kind of worried about him, like, thought he was too drunk, which made Elliot even madder. He went outside and there was, like, a little ledge outside of the party, and he jumped up on the ledge. It's like a little wall, like a stone wall. And he jumped up and he sort of, like, started making a gun motion and started trying to shoot people when they were passing by, just with his hand. He didn't have a gun. And other people saw him on the wall and they jumped up too. And then he started trying to push off attractive women. He tried to push them off the ledge. It was probably about, you know, 4 feet high. It wasn't, like, high, but these guys saw him doing it. So they pushed him off instead, you know, and then Elliot hurt his leg. They actually did punch him a couple times because he was, like, fighting with them. And yeah, to him, that was the ultimate end. He was the police were even called and like so on and so forth. And he was injured and had to stay with his mom for a while. His leg was actually kind of messed up. But in his mind at that point, there was almost no going back. And he decided that he had to go through with it. Even though he still delayed it, like you said, because he had injured himself, he had to put it off because he wasn't ready. But that was sort of the end for him as far as like him thinking that he could fit in.
He was posting some videos prior to his master plan, and then the police are at his bedroom door. He has guns, as you write. He has guns in there, and he has the writings about his ultimate plan. Now, he's terrified of everything, but there's this knock on the door. What's that all about? What happens there?
He just to backtrack a bit, too. I mean, this is a kid that, like, you know, had never been around, like, weapons, never, like, but, yeah, he actually bought some guns. Like, so he had purchased some guns, and the videos, I don't know if you've ever seen them, Dan, but they're, like, they're so weird. I mean, they get taken down a lot on YouTube, and then they get put back up. The Day of Retribution video, you can still find, like, really easily. That's the one that he put up right before he, you know, went off and did the massacre. You can still find that one, and it's very chilling and creepy, and it's pretty easy to find. But these other ones are not that easy to find. So he put up a whole bunch of videos, like, they were sort of like, you know, why don't girls like me? They vacillated between I'm so cool and perfect and handsome and why don't girls like me, and other ones were just sort of him driving in his expensive car with, like, walking on sunshine with Katrina and the waves going on in the background. But he also, some of them, he said some really weird, disturbing things. And his mother had seen one of them. And so she called the police. She didn't tell Elliot, but she called the police kind of like to do a wellness check. So yeah, they showed up. He had like all sorts of writings. He had his guns, like he had writings of his plans and his guns and so on and so forth. And he basically just told them that his mother was a quote-unquote worrywart and that he was fine, you know, that he didn't really mean anything and that everything was good. And then he took all the police, you know, they talked to him and they left, and then he took all his videos down at that point. He ended up uploading a bunch more again later, but at that point he took them all down and just kind of went on with his stuff. But he was really frightened that they would have found his plans and stopped the whole thing. And they could have potentially if they went in and searched his room, but there's all sorts of, you know, there's all sorts of civil rights stuff around that too. So I'm not saying that they necessarily even should have done that. I mean, it would have been great if they did, obviously, but hindsight's always 20/20 in situations like that.
What did his parents do as a result of this welfare check and these videos?
Well, at this point, he was seeing. They had hired a life coach. They actually even hired some younger people that were almost like, you know, paid friends that would go out and have coffee with him, things like that. And they had hired a life coach, and he'd gone back to his psychiatrist too. You know, that was always spotty. And when you go through his records, when you go through the reports, there's reports of him going to psychiatrists and different doctors, but it's unclear like how much time there is in between. So I believe that he had not seen the psychiatrist for quite a while, and they had just started after these videos, like, you know, having family sessions with the psychiatrist. But really what they were talking about was what's Elliot's relationship with his stepmother and so on and so forth. No one was aware that he, even the videos that he put up, should be clear, he didn't threaten violence against anybody. He was just acting very weird. He wasn't saying he was going to kill everybody or anything like that.
No.
So he lied to the psychiatrist. He lied to his family. So nothing ever really came of it.
He has a plan for April 24th. And like I mentioned, he has an accident. So he has to push it to May 24th, 2014.
Right.
What about this manifesto? Besides the videos, and he takes some videos down, puts some other videos up, what is contained in this manifesto? And he sends this to who?
Well, I mean, right before he does everything, he sent it to his life coach, he sent it to his mother, he sent it to his father. What's in it is again, as he goes, he just deteriorates more and more, to the extent that, I mean, he really feels that society, his thread throughout it is that he didn't do this to society. Society did it to him, and women have been so cruel to him all along. And you know, he had no choice but to show everybody his true worth and so on and so forth. And he also is very clear that he's aware that he's, you know, he doesn't even want to survive it. Like he doesn't want to go to jail or prison.
Right.
But him starting off as such a mild, meek young man and then turning into this, you know, psychotic killer, you know, is a very interesting and scary, you know, transgression, obviously. But the manifesto, right. Just like the video, you can find it pretty easily online. And as I stated before, this is one of the reasons I was interested in writing the book, because it's an incredible thing to read. I kind of got lost track there. What was your question about what he was thinking?
Well, basically the gist of the manifesto, we know of his philosophy all along, but he includes everything from, you know, that these women are beasts and the people that they associate with are beasts, so they should be eliminated, they shouldn't be allowed, they shouldn't be allowed to exist. His pain, his suffering, he talks about, so he has to inflict pain, and he has had fantasies that we didn't talk about actually flailing someone alive, so torture becomes one of his fantasies.
Well, I was just going to say that's a big part of his plan, is that we haven't talked about his last roommates yet, but a big part of his plan is killing his roommates so he can set up a torture chamber in his apartment and lure all sorts of attractive women in there and men, and then kill them one by one, torture them, flay their skins for their bones. It gets really bizarre here, you know. I mean, the whole thing's bizarre, but at this point it's beyond bizarre. You know, he wants to cut off their heads and put them in bags. And then later during his day of retribution, he's going to, like, stand on the street and open up the bag and, like, you know, kind of throw all the heads out and so on and so forth to show everyone how powerful he is. And it's really beyond the pale, absolutely bizarre, you know, at this point. What's in his manifesto and what he's thinking about what he's going to do.
Right. Now let's get to the actual day in question. It's fascinating and heartbreaking, and very vivid part of the book is when the parents are alerted, first the mother, then the father. Take us to that day and what he does, the roommates, his planning, what he has assembled in terms of weaponry. Tell us about that.
Sure. He had a Glock pistol, and he also had a, I don't even know how this is pronounced, but it's an SIG Sauer pistol. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly, but that he bought over time, and he'd been going to like a firing range and like practicing on them and so on and so forth. And it's kind of important a little bit to even talk about the roommates that he was living with. He was living with two Asian guys that he considered complete nerds. He didn't like them. They didn't like him. There was a variety of altercations. At one point he even called the police because he accused one of his roommates of stealing a pair of, like, you know, a couple $6 candles. So on and so forth. They did not like each other at all. So basically, in the middle of the night, they don't know exactly when his roommates were killed. They think they were killed about 3 hours before he went out and started his rampage. But he killed his roommates one by one. And this is like so bizarre, because even as he's writing all this stuff and he's saying all this stuff, he's still Elliot Rodger. Like, he's 5'4", he probably weighs 120 pounds. He'd never been in a fight in his life until he was beaten up. And even then, he wasn't really in a fight. He basically was just beaten up.
Right.
So he goes from that to doing this. So these roommates come in, two roommates and a friend. I always say roommates, but that's not true. There were three different victims, two roommates and a friend.
Right.
So they came in one by one, you know, half hour, hour apart. No one knows for sure this part when they were killed for sure. But they were definitely killed separately, and he would attack them with a knife, each one individually with a knife, stab them like numerous times until they were dead, and then he would drag a body into the bedroom, cover it with like towels and blankets, and wait for the next person to arrive. Now, it's important to say, too, that in the manifesto, there's nothing about this. Like, the manifesto goes up, you know, he doesn't write about what he did with the roommates before he went back out and killed. So there were three different people. He did that, and then he you know, sat in his apartment. And I imagine, you know, his plan, which is so bizarre, that he's going to lure people in there and kill them and torture them. I mean, first of all, I'm not saying this to be funny or facetious, but, I mean, he'd never been able to lure a woman into his apartment anyway.
That's right.
Not to mention with three dead bodies in there. So there's not much chance that he's going to be able to do it now. So that part never came to fruition. I mean, he killed the roommates in theory, because that was part of his plan, was to lure people into his apartment and kill other people in his apartment. But that never happened. So then there's like a period of, I believe, maybe like, you know, again, no one knows exactly when, but for a period of time, he didn't do anything at all. And then he was seen like outside in his car at one point, like, you know, playing on his laptop. He got a Starbucks, like coffee a few hours before. This is all like around 8:30 at night. So again, the roommates were killed sometime earlier in the day. Their bodies weren't found until the next day. So then he went to a sorority house, the Alpha Phi sorority house, like where he considered it to be where the women were the most attractive sorority, like at the school. So he had planned this particular sorority house. His plan was he was going to go in and kill all of them, basically, purely for the crime of being, in his opinion, like really attractive, you know. So he went there and he knocked on the door. And he continued to knock on the door, and for some reason, nobody answered it. It's kind of odd, because people even said afterwards that they would hear people knock. The door is locked, and he knocked, and people would hear people knocking on the door, and people would, you know, someone would go see who it was and let him in. But for some reason, nobody did. So now his plan's already gone completely. I mean, obviously, his plan would never have gone the way he wanted it to, because it was insane. But his plan's already gone out the window. No torture chamber. He couldn't get into the sorority house. So he basically just starts shooting. He gets back in his car and he just starts shooting people randomly. He shoots two women, three women actually. Two of them die. The other one survives. He just pulls up to them and just starts shooting. I mean, there's throughout this massacre, throughout this attack, like there's a series of stories of people just saying that he just pulled up to them in his BMW. This guy pulled up, looked at them, and, you know, started shooting. So two of those women died, one survived. He then just kept driving around the neighborhood, hitting people with his car. He killed another man with a shot that was trying to get into a deli. He killed him, hit numerous bicyclists, sideswept cars, just mayhem. Absolute mayhem until eventually, I mean, obviously the police were on the scene fairly quickly. One of them took a shot at Elliot. Well, he was shot at before and missed, but one of them actually hit Elliot in the thigh. Elliot crashed his car, and he ended up shooting himself in the head. And that was, you know, very different than what his – and he died. Very different than what his plan actually was. And what you were alluding to earlier was, yes, so that right before he went out and started these attacks, he had sent the manifesto, and he had uploaded the video, the Day of Retribution video. His mother saw it, talked to his father, and as this was going on, they were racing from their home to Santa Barbara, trying to call his cell, trying to get in touch with him, calling the police, until they were finally told to pull over, and the police let them know that their son had died. It's a very, very bizarre day, and horrible day, obviously.
Yeah. In the wake of this tragedy, what has happened with the incel online community? And we talked, we alluded to in the introduction about copycats. So
yeah.
This disaster, all these unique confluence of events and circumstances, and this young man's insane. But you say that there's copycats, there's other cases
yeah.
The aftermath.
Yeah, and I wanted to be clear too, because for the book, I interviewed a guy that he runs a site called incels.co that's the most popular so-called chat room for incels. But since Elliot did this, and they're not, my point is that I'm not even trying to allude to the fact that everyone that identifies with an incel or goes on a site like this is a murderous lunatic. But at the same point,
that's right.
But at the same point, there's a lot of people, whether it's jokingly or not, that they refer to Elliot Rodger as Saint Elliot. When I say a lot of people, I'm saying incels. They refer to him as Saint Elliot. Like they talk about going ER, meaning, you know, his initials, when they get angry. There's a lot of people
right.
on these sites that say that women should be, you know, put in concentration camps, that rape should be legal, that they basically say the very same things that Elliot Rodger did in his manifesto. The whole supreme gentleman thing is kind of like, because people, you know, they talk about it all the time on these sites, you know, they call him the supreme gentleman. Some of them, of course, are trolling in a sense, but some of them, you know, some of them aren't. And there have been I wouldn't say a huge amount of copycats, and some of them are sort of alluded to as being copycat killings, but they might not be. But the biggest one is Alec Maniacin, who was in Toronto. He did a van attack,
right,
where he killed numerous people. I think around 10, and injured a bunch
yeah.
of others. He did it with he just rammed people with his van, and he, you know, actually put on Facebook, you know, something to the effect of the incel rebellions has begun, all hail Elliot Rodger.
Wow.
A bunch of other killers have referenced Elliot Rodger in their writings before they've all the same type of thing where the guy in Florida, Scott Beerley. He's a Tallahassee guy that went into a yoga shop studio and killed a bunch of women. There's another guy, Christopher Harper Mercer. These guys all would reference Elliot Rodger or at least talk about themselves being incels before they did their crime, their killings. So it's become a thing. The Southern Poverty Law Center is now called incels a hate group because of their misogyny. The website that I just referenced, they used to be on Reddit. Reddit shut them down because of the things mm-hmm. they were saying. And Reddit doesn't shut people down that easily. Then they had a website hosted in the United States. That host shut them down because of things they were saying. Last I knew, they were posted out of a site in Iceland. So it's a very bizarre subculture. And again, I want to be clear that you know, I mean, internet trolls are everywhere. It's like you've got to be able to differentiate, you know, that some of these guys are just, this guy's messing around on the internet. I'm not saying it's cool. I'm just also not saying
yeah.
they're all potential killers, because they're certainly not.
Yeah. A lot of talk on the internet, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it would be irresponsible of me to, like, not actually say that because yeah, I mean, a lot of them are just, that's why I even said some of these guys that ended up killing people, they didn't reference Elliot Rodger. They represented other people too. Like Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland shooter, he's one of the guys, he referenced Elliot Rodger, but he also had a myriad of other issues. So it would be kind of irresponsible to think that Elliot Rodger was the reason Nicholas Cruz did what he did. But there are a couple, in particular Manassian, who waved that incel flag completely, and that's the only reason, according to them, that they did it, was their hatred of women.
Incredible. I want to thank you very much, Brian, for coming on and talking about the Supreme Gentleman Killer, the story of an incel mass murderer. It's been fascinating. This is a Wild Blue Press release, and how can they, is there a Facebook page or website they might take a look at?
Yeah, hey, Dan, I always appreciate you having me on. It's always interesting. Yeah, you can buy it through...
love having you on.
I do have a website. I have a website on brianwhitneyauthor.com. You can buy the book on Amazon. You can buy it through Wild Blue. You can buy it anywhere, basically, online. It's a really weird story. Like I said, I was very surprised that no one had ever... The main reason I wrote the book, as I said, I was like kind of surprised no one ever had. It's kind of like a story waiting to be told.
Absolutely, and you've done an admirable job. Thank you very much for The Supreme Gentleman Killer, The Story of an Incel Mass Murderer. Thank you very much, Brian Whitney.
You
have a great night. Thank you. Good night.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.